Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Hey everybody, it's Dan, and welcome to our Friday edition of the Orange and Brown Talk podcast. We're going to get you through your bye weekend with a round table. So it's Mary-Kate Cabot, Doug Lay-Marie, Scott Patsko, Ashley Bastock, and I, and we talk about some Browns personnel off the top. Kevin Stefanski, Andrew Berry, Baker Mayfield, Joe Woods, and the Haslams. And then we do some quick hit questions after the break. All of this to get you through, like I said, that bye week. Now, we will not have a podcast for you on Monday. We'll be back on Tuesday with the Hey MK edition of the podcast, and then we'll get back into our normal week. But hey, while it's the bye week, why not think about becoming a Football Insider subscriber or even gifting it to someone as Christmas is coming up during this holiday season? Hey, a little Football Insider subscription, right? Go to cleveland.com/browns, the blue banner at the top of the page, to get info and get signed up. Get a daily newsletter delivered right to your inbox. Get access to become one of our text subscribers, and also get access to exclusive stories on cleveland.com/browns. All right, here we go. Our Friday Orange and Brown Talk Roundtable, getting you through the bye week. Back on Tuesday. Have a great weekend. And here we go, our bye week roundtable on the Browns. We're going to try and get you through the weekend here on the Orange and Brown Talk podcast. As the Browns do not play on Sunday, so we're going to try and take some bigger picture looks at things. And the first thing we're going to do is look at some key Browns players. Well, one player and then a whole bunch of others, some coaches, staff members, things like that. So here's what we're going to do. Each of us is going to make like a case or an opening statement about a person. And then we're going to discuss them for a few minutes. We're going to move on to the next one here in this first segment. So first up, we're going to start with the big one, Baker Mayfield. And Ashley, you get to go first. Give us 30 seconds on Baker Mayfield.
Starting off with a bang here. Okay. So my thing with Baker this year is obviously don't want to place too much blame on the injuries for some of these issues he's been having, but they do factor in. So for that reason, I think largely the team Baker is going to take the leeway that they have with seeing what happens next year and then making any long-term decisions after that. Like, I don't think the Baker Mayfield question about is he the quarterback long-term for this team is going to be answered in the immediate future. I don't think anyone really wants to answer it in the immediate future, quite honestly, especially when they don't have to. I know we had that whole discussion about a few weeks ago about whether or not we thought he would make it to the end of a second contract with Cleveland. And that's a long time from now. I still kind of stand with my original opinion on that, that because it's so long from now, I'm not really confident that that ultimately happens. And if it doesn't, you know, I think you kind of as a fan base thank Baker for everything he's given to you in helping this turnaround happen. But long-term, I would say I'm still up in the air on what that means for him. And I think everyone else is as well. And I don't think we get answers anytime soon.
A minute and 20 seconds, Ashley, your fine letter is in the mail. Let's start with the injury piece of this. Because I think that's fascinating because Andrew Berry talked, we're recording this on Thursday. Andrew Berry talked on Wednesday and he kind of joined this growing chorus of people who just are refusing to let Baker use injuries as an excuse.
And that's
he basically said Baker is healthy enough to win games.
I still question like all of the issues, but I guess earlier in the year, when you were think about the shoulder and how it was affecting him, like those numbers are what they are already, right? Like more than half of the season is gone. And that shoulder was impacting him. But I do think, yeah, we're hearing this growing chorus of people, like you said, Dan, kind of saying he's healthy and leaving it at that. So you can draw your own conclusions what that means.
But I also think the conversation at times is too much about Baker because frankly, it's not about Baker. It's about the Browns. And whether it's fair to him that he's injured or how much should you evaluate or whatever, it's like the Browns have to figure out what they're doing. And while there may not be a time clock on Baker because they can look next year, then they can franchise him, whatever. There's a time clock on this team. And we thought this year was maybe their best chance to win, and they're 6-6. And it doesn't mean anything's going away. We think this team is built for the long haul, but you can't throw away Myles Garrett's prime years and Nick Chubb's prime years while Baker Mayfield's trying to learn how to play quarterback. So we have to make sure that it's not a Baker Mayfield conversation. It's a quarterback of the Browns situation. And it very well may be that the answer is, you know what, this is not fair to Baker. He tried to play through injury. Stuff happens. Man, life, what are you going to do? But we're moving on. Do you think he's going to go win 4 Super Bowls in Miami or something? He's going to go be a Hall of Famer in Vegas or something? Figure out your quarterback thing. Whatever happens to him, happens to him. Now, maybe it's still him. But I think we have to remember what the conversation is. And it's not really about him. They got to figure out what's best for this team. And it might be life sucks. We're moving on.
That's why I think it is about him. I think it is all about him. I think they have to figure out if he is the guy or if he isn't the guy. And as you mentioned, you can't waste Miles's best years and you can't waste Denzel's years. And that's why I do think so much focus has to be put on the quarterback and the evaluation of the quarterback. As far as the injury piece is concerned right now, I've been in that camp for a long time that we have been overstating the injuries a little bit too much. Been covering the NFL for many, many, many years. I've watched quarterbacks play very injured. There are other quarterbacks playing injured this year. That's what quarterbacks do. Baker Mayfield's torn labrum is in his left shoulder. We need to remember that. It's not in his right shoulder. It's not his throwing shoulder, okay? That is a key piece of information. We talk about it sometimes, not you guys, I mean, just in general, like it's his right throwing shoulder that he's trying to throw through a torn labrum with. A bruised heel, not a deal breaker. Bruised knee, not a deal breaker. And those are things that get better after a week or two. So even if they were really bad for a week or two, they're not as bad anymore. I feel like the injury piece has been a little bit overblown, and Baker Mayfield is a competitive individual. If he felt like he was a liability and couldn't go out there and help the football team win, I think he would tap out. I think he'd get himself out of there. So the medical staff said he was fine to win and play. The Browns think he was fine to win, and he thought he was fine to play. So I think we need to just minimize the whole injury piece just a little bit.
But so here's the thing with the franchise quarterback. The answer on a quarterback can be yes, no, or maybe. Yes and no are easy. Maybe is hard. The thing that I'm saying is if you're still at maybe with him, and we've kind of been at maybe with him for a while, at some point with Baker so far, the maybe has been a yes, because a maybe is keep the maybe because it might become a yes. I'm wondering if the maybe becomes a no, because it's like, I don't know, maybe the maybe will become a yes eventually, but we can't wait anymore. And it's not about whether it's fair to him. It's about what's right for this franchise. And maybe it's go get another quarterback for next year, or at least go get another option to have in camp with him. So the maybe makes it hard. Yeses and nos in life are easy, my friends. Maybes make the world go round. And I think we might be looking at our maybes in a different light.
Would you?
I have a thought on that, but we haven't heard from Scott yet. Scott, what do you think?
Hearing everybody talk, it makes me think that everybody here feels that Baker is the biggest reason for why they're 6-6 right now. Are we going that route? I don't believe that. I mean, he plays one position out of between 30 and 40 you can play on a football team in a game. Yeah, he has an outsized impact, especially on the offense, but he doesn't play defense, doesn't play special teams. You know, wins are not a quarterback stat. I think all we really know for right now.
10 points are a quarterback stat.
No, it's not. It's an offense stat. But all we know for sure is Baker Mayfield is going to be the quarterback of the team next year. And beyond that, it's probably up to him and what Andrew Berry thinks of how he does next year, whether or not he's quarterback beyond that. But I mean,
why do you say we know that? We know he's the quarterback.
Well, he's under contract for next season.
Okay, I mean, he's a quarterback. That's my whole point.
I don't think it's very likely that they're going to cut bait with him after a season like this. And whether or not you believe the injuries are a huge part of the way he's performing, they're still part of the way he's performing. It's quarterbacks play injured, but everybody is impacted differently. It's clear that he's not able to do the things that we've seen him do in years past when he was healthy. So, well, but we know he's going to be the quarterback next year.
I think for me too, like we've talked about this multiple times as well. Like if Baker, it's always, if Baker had this, if the conditions are perfect for Baker Mayfield to succeed here. So I think it's about, is the organization willing to go through everything required to make those conditions perfect? And I mean, as Dan wrote, you kind of follow the money and they've shown what they're investing in. And it's that run game, I think, more than focusing on making everything exactly perfect for Baker Mayfield.
Do we know that he is going to be the quarterback next season? And I don't know that that is a 100% given. I think it's probably pretty likely. But as I've written before, this whole decision on Baker Mayfield is also a two-way street. He's got a very strong team around him in the same way that Odell Beckham Jr. had a strong team around him. And if he doesn't feel like this is the right place for him, or if they bring in his replacement next year, there will be some discussions that will take place between Baker's camp and between the Cleveland Browns. And those discussions, they could lead to some kind of an extension. They could lead to playing out the fifth year option, which I heard a stat yesterday where if you play out the fifth year option, you're like most of the time, like you're gone the next year. You're gone. They could play out the fifth year option, or they could all decide, hey, maybe this isn't a fit anymore. Maybe this isn't working right. And let's see if maybe you can find a trade partner or whatever else the case may be. So although I think he will be the Browns quarterback next season, I'm not 100% certain about that. And I think, even though I asked Andrew Berry yesterday, what does he have to show you in the last five games? Andrew said, these last five games don't have, you know, they're not going to be the be all or the end all of the evaluation, but I think they're pretty damn important. They are important. If you can't say that these five games are important in the future of Baker Mayfield, I mean, he's not going to say that, but they are important because he can go out there and he can beat four or five winning teams by the time it gets to that point. He can beat four or five winning teams, and he has not shown he can do that. He is 1-5 this season against winning teams and 7-19 in his career. And yes, I do think that's a quarterback stat. I think a quarterback can, if he's good enough, strap a team onto his back in certain situations and win a football game, or go down in the fourth quarter and win a football game and pull out a game. He's 0-4 in game winning drives this year. And I think those stats are not what you're looking for from your number one overall pick, but he can change the narrative in these final five games. He can change the narrative. I'm not saying he has to win every single one of them, but he has to show that he can go out there and he can beat the Ravens and the Steelers, which he hasn't done consistently, and go out there and see what you can do against Aaron Rodgers and the Green Bay Packers. Because if you're going to the Super Bowl and trying to win it, you got to beat him. You might have to beat him there. So what do you got? And yes, I think it does fall a lot on the quarterback.
What if he's just the guy by default?
Like, when?
Because I think we all, you know, we sit here and it's like, well, you know, go get Russ Wilson, go get Aaron Rodgers. You know, some people would probably still take Deshaun Watson, but the reality is the Browns don't have, like, the Philadelphia Eagles are going to blow the Browns away with whatever they can offer.
No. There's a million answers. We can't act like there's no answer.
Like, is Kenny Pickett going to be your guy next year?
No. The two choices, the history's right there. In year five of Marcus Mariota, the Tennessee Titans brought in Ryan Tannehill as a veteran. They had two quarterbacks, and by the middle of the season, they benched Mariota and went to Tannehill. Last year, the Eagles drafted Jalen Hurts, and by the end of the year, Carson Wentz was done, and they went to Jalen Hurts. Neither of those guys were first-round picks. Neither of those guys were huge trades. Neither of those guys were gigantic, humongous signings. They were legitimate options, though. They were better options than Case Keenum. That's what I'm thinking they do, and I think that's what they have to do. They can't come back with a Case Keenum-level backup next year. They have to come back with a real guy, Teddy Bridgewater. Right? Teddy Bridgewater's in camp. Baker's the guy. But then if Baker looks like crap in week four, Teddy's in and then the way you go. Or you draft the guy in the second round or whatever, right? Or the third round. But no, they don't, they're not going to draft Kenny Pickett. And they don't have to trade for Russell Wilson. But we can't pretend that the other default two things that we can't say on this podcast: Super Bowl, no more saying Super Bowl on this podcast for in any context, and default. Because the whole thing with the Browns was they had 20 years of quarterback default. Well, Brady Quinn fell. We'll take Brady Quinn. So you have to, but it, you don't have to attack it the same way you attack taking Baker at one, but you have to look for answers. You have to problem solve. And there's ways you can do that. So that's where I am. And that's why I don't think anything's guaranteed for next year. I'm not booting him, but I'm providing real options behind him. And so if you get to this exact point next year, there's a real option beyond, well, Case Keenum was good 5 years ago. Sorry, Dan, go ahead.
Oh, no, that was at least, look, when Mitch Trubisky's here, at least we only have to drive like 45 minutes to go write the story about his high school life.
But I mean, like for real, right? I mean, aren't there, we can't, here's the thing. They went all in on Baker. You have to go all in at some point, but sometimes it doesn't work. But then survive in advance, figure out something else. You can't spin your wheels forever. And so there are other ways you can go about this. Start taking some shots at the dartboard. Right. Hey, there's this third round guy that we kind of like. Right. Hey, there's this veteran. He's not going to cost an arm and a leg, but he's more legit than Case Keenum. That's all. I think they have to do that and will absolutely do that next year. One of those two. And that will be a different situation than it is now.
I think it's flawed logic. I'm agreeing with you, Doug, here. I think it's very flawed logic when I hear people say, well, they had all the, look at the shirt with the millions of quarterbacks on it. And, you know, look at what they've been through all of these years and blah, 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 blah. So what? That doesn't mean that you have to accept mediocrity if that's what you think this is. Now, maybe that's not what this is going to be. Maybe everything's going to snap into focus after the bye week and it's going to get great. But if you don't think that this is the quarterback that is at the same level as some of your other really great players, and this team is built to win now, you don't have to say, oh, well, he's the best we've had since 1999. So, I mean, we might as well run it back with that. That's insanity. That's absolute insanity. Of course, just like every other position, you have to seek to get the best you can get. And that's what they'll have to do.
There's our Baker case. I guess I'm up now. I got to talk about Kevin Stefanski. All right. So when we talk about Kevin Stefanski and his future, I look at the rest of the division. I'm not counting Cincinnati in this because their coach is young and relatively new as well. So you guys have watched the Pittsburgh Steelers this year. You guys have watched the Baltimore Ravens this year. These are not particularly impressive football teams necessarily. Obviously you got Lamar Jackson, you got a good defense in Pittsburgh, but Pittsburgh is 5-5-1 this year. They're a tough out most weeks except for last week's. Baltimore is 8-3. They have the number one seed currently in the AFC. These are teams with coaches that have come in, established what they are, established the type of players they want, how they run their system. They've been there forever. You can count on Mike Tomlin. You can count on John Harbaugh. And that's kind of my case for Kevin Stefanski long-term and why I think the Browns have the right guy, even if this year hasn't been perfect, even if the play calling element, which we've talked about on here, hasn't been perfect. I think the Browns found someone who can be their Mike Tomlin, their John Harbaugh. It's not going to be great every year. You're not going to win. I mean, Mike Tomlin won one Super Bowl and then he loses in the playoffs constantly. It's not going to be perfect. But
don't say that word. No Super Bowl phrases in any context on this show, especially from the person who picked the Browns to make the Super Bowl. Sorry.
I'll bleep it out.
Thank you.
I'll bleep it out. But even, again, even Mike Tomlin, right, makes some head-scratching decisions every now and again, whatever. His team is always there, always competitive, even this version of this team, which is just absolutely brutal to watch. And that, to me, is what I think the Browns have found in Kevin Stefanski, is a guy who can be that type of coach, who can have this team competitive and in the hunt every single year. That was more than 30 seconds too. Ashley and I both got fined.
What is your proof of that statement?
My proof. See, I didn't think I was going to get asked for proof.
It's a courtroom, man. Present the evidence.
So based on what I saw last year, how they handled that season, navigated that season. I feel like he has generally stabilized the circus atmosphere that surrounded the Browns. I feel like even in this year where it hasn't always been easy, and his quarterback, I don't know if he trusts his quarterback, honestly. It hasn't been perfect. They are still 6-6, and there is a path for them to, I'm not going to say the word, Doug. There is a path for them to get to the playoffs, even if I don't necessarily believe they will. I think he's established what he wants, and he took over a team. There's a lot of inherited talent on this team, like Odell Beckham, Jarvis Landry. You know, some of it is really helpful. Nick Chubb, Kareem Hunt, right? That's all helped him look very good. Eventually, this roster is going to look like a Kevin Stefanski roster. Whatever that means, whatever that looks like, we'll find that out. But just what I've seen from him, he's unflappable. He doesn't take the bait. He doesn't make headlines constantly. I mean, I talked to Joel Bitonio in training camp, and one of the things he said to me is they'd go into the locker room after practice and they'd see on their phones that their coach said something like completely crazy or something from upstairs. They saw some story or something that was completely crazy. He's come in and he's really stabilized things. And I've said it over and over again. I think something is weird with this team, but I don't think it's as bad as it's been. I just think stuff is weird this year, and next year it's going to be better. That's all. I think he's stabilized things. I think he showed us something last year. I believe in Kevin.
Things have been weird this year. They'll be better next year, unless you're the quarterback. I think that's the theme of this podcast so far.
But why is things
been weird? I think the coach, well, never mind. I won't say that.
But it sounds like almost the thing you just said, Dan, if you replace the word coach with quarterback and the word Kevin Stefanski with Baker Mayfield, it's the same conversation. It's exactly what Mary Kay just said. Just because it used to be on fire and somebody came in and put out the fire, doesn't mean that just putting out the fire is then the standard. Right? I mean, Mary Kay, this is your, right? So, okay, coaches here used to be bonkers. They were bonkers. The quarterbacks here used to be terrible. Now they're not terrible. But so is not terrible the new standard? Because the other thing is, and I lumped in Kevin Stefanski with John Harbaugh and Mike Tomlin as much as anybody. John Harbaugh and Mike Tomlin, their first 5 years, both of them double-digit wins for the 5 years and a Super Bowl. So let's remember the context here. The guy won one playoff game, and he's 6-6 in year two. So, and at some point, also, there's a lot of Andy Reid comparisons, I think, with this guy, right? When you come up like, hey, he's a play caller, and he's kind of boring, and he just, you know, does the thing. I was in Philadelphia when Andy Reid was the head coach there. Andy Reid drove people crazy in Philadelphia because, like, the personality, they kind of wanted a more fiery guy, and he wasn't fiery. And so, like, whenever something would go wrong, people would get frustrated. Andy Reid won double-digit games 5 of his first 6 years. He was 5-11, and then he won double-digit games every year. So Kevin is competent and calming and poised and all those things, but man, you better win. It's just like with Baker. If you're not going to escape the pocket and have some magic, you better be accurate. If Kevin's not going to come in and rally the fans and rally the team and have speed, you better be hyper competent. Because as soon as it feels like you're not competent and the play calling's a little weird, then it's like, well, what else are you doing? Maybe that's not fair, but I don't care.
You know, I think that he has established himself as an amazing CEO coach because we've watched him handle situations that have been very difficult. And I think he does a really, really nice job with those things. In terms of evaluating him as a football coach right now, I think it's a little bit of a difficult evaluation when you are still evaluating your starting quarterback, because most coaches go the way of their quarterback. I mean, you have to have a pretty darn good quarterback most of the time if you're going to be winning. Maybe he has his guy, maybe he doesn't. We're still trying to all figure that out. But I do think that Kevin has established himself as a really good CEO coach because we can see that. We can see how he handled COVID last year. We can see how he handled Odell this year. What I do think that needs to be under the microscope is his play calling ability. And if it becomes evident midway through next season that, you know, that his play calling ability isn't what it needs to be, then they need to upgrade it. Right now, again, I think it's hard to figure it out. What came first, the chicken or the egg type of thing? We don't know. But it needs to be looked at, because there are plenty of games this year, even this year, not just in terms of running the ball versus passing the ball, but even use of personnel. Sometimes I'm like, well, that was a head scratcher. Like, I didn't get that, you know? I mean, there are times when I don't know why Nick's not on the field, or I don't know why you would use Demetric Felton in that situation instead of Dearness Johnson, or why aren't you doing more of this, or why aren't you whatever. There are plenty of times that I'm wondering why things aren't going differently. And so I think that needs a long, hard look. But in terms of CEO coach, he's here. He's going to be here for a long time. He was handpicked by Paul DePodesta and Andrew Berry. Those guys aren't going anywhere anytime soon. And they just need to make sure that the play calling is what it needs to be. Because I can tell just in Baker's body language, he does not like the play calling.
I do want to say this real quick, and Scott and Ashley, you guys can go. But like, when we talk about the play calling, again, this just goes, what if it's not the play caller? What if there's a screen cap going around of two tight ends wide open? Kareem Hunt, that screen would have been six. Quarterback dropped the ball. Just that's one of the things we have to consider. I agree. I don't know that Demetric Felton needs to touch the football again this year very often, but what if it's not the play caller? I just lobbed that one for you and for Ashley and Scott.
I was going to say, I mean, I just feel like we've heard it, this whole discussion about Kevin Stefanski, the conversations about him and Baker Mayfield and the future of the Browns are just so intertwined at this point. And I am not convinced both would be here long-term essentially because of that. And I think for Kevin Stefanski, when you talk about this year, especially, I'm especially interested after the bye, kind of based on what Mary Kay was saying with the play calling, because, and we've talked about this on this podcast this week, about sometimes it just feels like he is not calling the offense in the best way for the pieces that he currently has healthy and available on the field. And again, like we talk about that final drive against the Ravens, I get it. I get why Kareem Hunt is typically your option with under 2 minutes to go in a game like that with the game on the line. But the eye test, no matter what the analytics say, you're watching football. The eye test for me says, why is Nick Chubb not out there if Kareem is not ready to go? Like, Nick Chubb can go out there and catch those little passes, you know, probably if you need him to. He's a playmaker. So that's, for me, what's been so frustrating. And, you know, we talked about him getting his head out of the play sheet a little bit. And maybe if, you know, he let Alex Van Pelt call the plays, then that might fix some of that. But, yeah, I think analytics are good until they aren't serving you in the way you want them to anymore.
So Kevin Stefanski was hired in most part because of his play calling and his offensive ability. And last year at this time, or pretty much last year at this time, they'd just beaten the Titans. They were 9-3, and we had all sorts of great things to say about Kevin Stefanski. A year later, he's apparently lost it. I mean, if are we at a point in with the Browns where a coach is not allowed to struggle? Like, 1 year after being hired, a season and a half after being hired, everybody wants to take play calling away from him. I don't know that that's the answer. I have no problems with Kevin Stefanski or the job he's done. The offense has been a mess of people rotating in and out, poor performance, poor execution. People that you don't want on the field have to be on the field in critical situations because the other people aren't healthy. I'm not ready to take anything away from Kevin Stefanski. I think he's done what he could this year.
I don't think it's only a play caller discussion, though. I mean, like, in terms of handling Odell, what did he do that handled Odell well? Like, why are we throwing bouquets at Kevin Stefanski for Odell? Aren't there coaches who would have figured out a way to prevent the Odell situation from bubbling over?
No, that, you know what? Here's what I think happened behind the scenes there. I think once Odell Sr. put up the video, no matter what they say, I think that became scorched earth for Baker.
No, but then Kevin didn't do anything. What did Kevin do? Kevin didn't solve anything with Odell. He should. Why? If other couldn't other of coaches prevented the Odell dad video from coming out by integrating Odell Beckham Jr., your highest paid receiver, into the offense more effectively in the first half of the year?
I mean, there was a whole video of Odell wide open and the ball not coming to him.
Okay, so you're just on Kevin's calling a great game and Baker stinks.
He has not been perfect. You know, you guys have made the cases for the things that have gone. And look, the stuff that happened on Sunday night with 12 men, like not being able to get guys on the field and all of that. Like there's no excuses for that. I'm not going to sit here and try and excuse that stuff and say, you know, the personnel decisions haven't always been perfect and all of that. But again, I'm just not convinced that when some of this stuff isn't working, it's all on the play caller.
And what I mean about the Odell situation, and I do think that they tried to make that. I think they did a good job of trying to make it work. Like Dan said, there's a whole video showing that there were times where those two misconnected for whatever reason. And there's a lot that we don't know. But I think once it got to a certain point, it was taken out of Kevin Stefanski's hands. That was an organizational decision. And I think there was no turning back. They were going to back their quarterback when they knew the receiver was going to be gone after this year. And that they still at that point felt like this is our quarterback of the future. They did still believe that. And they might still believe that. They might still believe that. I think they need to see some things in the next five games. That's just my opinion. But they might still believe this is our guy. So they were not going to take Odell's side on that. And I think that got taken out of Kevin Stefanski's hands. I don't think he had a say in that. But I thought he navigated the team through that fairly.
But how? But like what? But I understand that maybe it wasn't out of his hands. So they lose Odell. They come back the next week. They force a bunch of turnovers. Denzel gets a pick six in the end zone that turns a 7-0 deficit to a 7-0 lead. They roll there. And then the next three games, they score 7, 13, and 10. Like, what is what? Like, I don't like
I mean from the voice CEO face of the franchise. Here's what we say, as opposed to like how Freddie would have handled that situation. I'm not saying from a necessarily schematic standpoint.
Performance.
I'm talking about CEO type of thing. And that's why I'm saying then you have to evaluate the play calling part of it. There are plenty of head coaches that don't necessarily call plays, but they can run a football team. And I think they know, they have identified he is their guy to do that. Now, is he the guy to call plays for the next 5 years? That I think has to still be up in the air.
I'm not saying Kevin Stefanski should be fired. I'm saying he should be criticized and he needs to be better. That's all.
That's fair. I think all of that is fair. I think those criticisms are fair, but I still believe the Browns have their head coach there. I still believe they have their Mike Tomlin or their John Harbaugh, who are not perfect coaches by any stretch of the imagination.
They win 12 games every year, but they're not perfect coaches.
They aren't.
They're a lot. I would suggest
I love Mike Tomlin. I think Mike Tomlin is awesome. Mike Tomlin makes in-game decisions that will just make your head explode.
Yeah, Doug,
did you watch the playoff game last year when he didn't go for it on fourth down? The Steelers might have won that game.
No, but
Mike Tomlin is still a great coach, and I would take Mike Tomlin to coach my team any day.
Okay. It's not a Mike Tomlin discussion.
Ashley, you were going to say something. Go ahead.
I was going to say, Doug, your head was ready to explode when his kicker got a concussion against the Browns this year.
No, I agree.
Play.
No, but like, let's go. I mean, at some point, again, we've all done it. Mike Tomlin has won 150 games over like 15 years in the NFL and is a leader of a franchise. And I get what you're saying. Sometimes his in-game decisions, you never doubt Mike Tomlin's leadership and his players' belief in him. And at times I'm a little over calm Kevin, because I'm not sure the Browns need calm. I get it. They needed calm in a pandemic. Maybe they need calm when players' dads start tweeting out videos. I would like a little butt kick Kevin. And so I like butt kick Mike. So
I like Mike. You should have done the Kevin Stefanski introduction with your minute that we
gave.
Oh,
no, I got plenty. I got plenty.
Oh, yeah.
It would be very, when I do my introduction, it'd be very positive. Be very positive.
Listen, yes. We're going Buckeye talk pace on this pod so far.
Oh, 4 hours.
All right, Mary Kay, you're up with Andrew Berry.
Okay, I have Andrew Berry, and I firmly believe that Andrew Berry is going to be here for the very, very long haul. I had heard that when he left this organization to go to the Philadelphia Eagles in 2019, that he was going to come back, and he was going to come back as the general manager, and that was part of the plan. It was part of the long range plan for this football team. They love Andrew Berry, and he's proving to be good at his job. He still has, obviously, the jury is going to be out. We need to see what happens over the next 4, 5, 6, 7 years, but he's going to get that time. But so I'm going to use my little bit of time here in my intro to say that I think that this is going to be an absolutely critical, crucial decision that he's got coming up with the quarterback situation, because he has got to determine if they have the right guy in the building right now, if they let him come back and try it again next year, which seems likely, or if they try to upgrade as soon as next year, given the fact that you are built to win now. As we said, we thought that this was their prized pig that they were taking to the fair this year. This was the team that was supposed to go the distance. So, knowing that you've got all these guys in their prime, do you have to make a decision whereby you have a different starting quarterback on opening day 2022? Do you believe that Baker can take you where he needs to take you next year? Do you try to do some kind of extension? Do you not? This is an enormous decision, and it could define Andrew Berry, because if you pick the right guy, it changes all kinds of careers. I mean, look right now. I'm sorry, I'm going long. I've got to cut myself off here. Give me the hook.
I'm typing up the fine letter.
Give me the hook. My goodness. But look at Kyle Shanahan right now. Kyle Shanahan someday might be saying, oh my God, I could have had Mac Jones, right? I mean, maybe not. Maybe both quarterbacks will be amazing. But it's such a huge decision. And I think that it's right in the palm of Andrew Berry's hands, and it will determine the future of the Cleveland Browns, and it's huge.
Scott, give us some Andrew Berry thoughts.
Geez. I think you're right. But of course, how this team performs over the first, 3, 4, 5 years of his tenure is going to help define who he is as a GM. But so many of the other decisions around the quarterback are going to impact how that quarterback does. And I don't look at this team and say Andrew Berry is a cause for what happened. I don't think I look at the situation and say Andrew Berry messed that up. Or I don't look at any of the free agent signings or people who necessarily haven't worked out and think that it all traces back to Andrew Berry not doing a good job. Yeah, I mean, I think of all the people we're going to be talking about here off the top, Andrew Berry is probably the one I would remove from it, just because so many other people are more hands-on in determining how good or successful this team is on a day-to-day basis.
No, Andrew Berry is good at his job and beyond. I mean, the real issue is, yes, of course, the quarterback decision is important, but do Browns fans trust him to make that decision? Right? That whatever he decides, do they think, well, I trust that guy. Maybe I'll disagree with the decisions every now and then, but do I trust the person making them? And I think the answer is yes. And I think the answer should be yes. I think processes win over time. I think they have good processes in place. That is a job where you don't have to be fiery, whatever. Like if I want a little more gusto from Kevin, you don't want that from Andrew Berry. I think he's the right guy. I think you look at Demetric Felton and Donovan Peoples-Jones and some of the late round guys, you can see them, mine in the late rounds, which is going to be important. I think the free agent signings were smart and calculated. And I think he's the guy long-term. And I don't know that there's any, are there any Browns fans who would disagree with that? Like this is the guy, I think. This is the guy. And I think people should trust him to do his job.
Yeah.
What evidence do you have of that?
John Johnson, I think you can go through. I mean, I just said Donovan Peoples-Jones, Demetric Felton. I think you can look at the calculated free agent signings that made sense in the moment, right? Anthony Walker, John Johnson III, the way he played the Jadeveon Clowney situation, a clear sense of purpose with signing the guards. Is it what everybody would do, but he has a sense of purpose and a process, and this is how we're going to go about it. The Jack Conklin signing when they needed to fix the offense. I think there are multiple things where his job is to put people in place to succeed, and then you tell the coach to go execute it. So I think the evidence of him getting the right people in place is pretty darn good, which is more evidence than 6-6. And Mary Kay, by the way, last year when the Browns were winning, and it was like you kept saying, well, who are they really playing? You know, that's part of this too with Kevin. But I appreciate you throwing it back at me. That was good stuff.
I was kidding.
No, but it's right. But you have to stand up on it. I can't say one thing on one person and not say it on the other. But I think if you lined up the 15 best things Andrew Berry's done in his job and the 15 best things Kevin Stefanski has done in his job, I'll take Andrew Berry's list every time.
But wait, one thing real quick, and then I'll shut up. I'll try to. And that is, we assume that he can draft the next quarterback of the future or acquire the next quarterback of the future if that has to happen soon. We assume that, but we don't know that yet. So the jury on that is going to be out. And that is, I think, it's the defining thing for a GM. You got to be able to pick that guy and get it right.
I think Andrew Berry, of all these people we've talked about so far, is the least, I guess, controversial, combative, like in terms of probably what people's opinions are of him. But I do agree with what Mary Kay said up top, that the quarterback decision, I think, is going to be so vitally important in terms of determining his legacy in Cleveland. And I guess the thing with decisions like that, there's always what ifs, if something goes wrong. So if, let's say they decide to move on from Baker, it doesn't work out, there's of course going to be a lot of rose colored glasses, I guess, on the fan base and be like, what if Baker had stayed? What if they found a way to work it out? If the opposite happens, the same is true. But I think it's very clear from everything we've talked about. And again, going back to who they've chosen to extend, how they've chosen to spend their money, I do think his vision is pretty clear. Like, obviously intensely values Myles Garrett, as he should. Put so much faith in the run game with extending those guys on the line and obviously Nick Chubb and Kareem Hunt, which was a little different. But I just think overall his vision is very clear, and that is reason for optimism alone. But the quarterback thing coming up, the decisions that have to be made, I don't envy him. I think I've said that multiple times on past podcasts, but I think that's going to be a huge part of his legacy, and it's a piece that we just don't have yet.
Yeah, I mean, and I think, you know, again, maybe this goes back to Kevin, like, it hasn't been perfect with Andrew. You know, I don't know how that first draft class is going to end up looking, but it's not going to be a devastating, it's not going to be, I mean, we'll see what happens with Chedrick Wills. Mary Kay, you've talked about this. He might have picked the wrong tackle, but that's not going to be a devastating move. He's going to be able to go fix it. Or maybe Chedrick Wills will end up working out. You know, the rest of that class, we'll see. Donovan Peoples-Jones, I think, has already been a hit. This year's class absolutely nailed those first two picks. You know, we'll see about Felton, but like he's a guy that's shown he knows how to go out and address the problems and fix them. And if he makes a mistake, I feel like he's going to go fix that too. He's not going to be so stubborn that he's not going to go fix something. I mean, he didn't bring back B.J. Goodson. He went and got Anthony Walker. You know, so I think he knows how he wants to build a team. I think we have an idea of how he wants to approach things. You know, DPJ and Demetric Felton are prime examples. Gamble on traits. So far, it looks like the DPJ thing for where he was taken, that's a really productive pick. We'll see about Felton. But we kind of know exactly how Andrew Berry wants to approach us, and we know what he's looking for. And I think that's really important to have, again, a head coach and a GM who we just kind of know. You know what you want. It's why the Ravens are so good. Ozzie Newsome, Eric DaCosta know exactly what they want when they look at a linebacker or when they look at a defensive lineman. And they go draft a guy that had zero sacks last year, and he wrecked the game on Sunday night. It's stuff like that, that when you have guys together who know what each other want, know what they want to do, that's how you start to turn an organization into a winner. And I think, and obviously Andrew Berry is a huge, huge part of all that. Is that all we have to do with Andrew Berry?
Good. He's good. Everybody likes him.
We needed to bank a little time. All right, Scott, time to talk about Joe Woods.
Joe Woods. The Browns are 3-3 in their last six games. And in five of those games, the defense has given up 16 points or less. That's pretty much the end of my argument. Look, it took them a while to get everybody on the same page. They've dealt with some issues, some injuries here and there. JOK missing games certainly didn't help. But, you watch what he did against the Ravens last week. I think that was impressive. The whole concept of getting pressure without blitzing your head off has worked for them. Not as well as far as getting sacks, but if you want to get pressure on people, that plan of attack is something that he tried to do last year. It didn't work. This year with some better players, it has worked. And yeah, I mean, this defense is not the reason why they're 6-6. I don't know anybody who could point to them and say that that's the case, or at least it's not the case that they have not won as many games over the second half of the season. Don't have any problems with Joe Woods' defense right now.
I agree with that. I have felt pretty much all season long that people were being way too hard. People had Joe Woods on the hot seat before the season even started. And I'm like, wait a minute. What's that all about? And then as the season went along, we all watched training camp every day. They never were out there together, those defensive players. I mean, that was the most disjointed defensive training camp I've ever seen. It was the training camp of bucket hats, basically. So those guys were never out there together, and it was going to take some time. Then you had some pretty significant injuries along the way. You had Grant Delpit coming back and playing for the first time off of a very, very major injury. Did have JJ3 kind of playing out of position maybe a little bit, but probably by necessity. But now you're seeing it start to come together. And as Scott mentioned, giving up 16 points or fewer is pretty phenomenal. And what they're now starting to do is get the takeaways. And that's everything. I mean, you've got to get those if you can get those takeaways, that's the number one thing you have to be able to do. And now they're doing it. And I've been very impressed with just the secondary, with the way all those guys are playing. They're really, really getting good. All those guys are improving every single week in the secondary. I mean, Denzel Ward is having his best season. Greg Newsome looks every bit the first round pick. Grant's now coming around. JJ3, I just think the defensive backs have played incredibly, incredibly well. And I think they look well coached to me, and they've overcome some of their problems and their issues. So I'm bullish on Joe Woods.
I do agree with everything that's kind of already been said, especially when you look at, like Scott said, five of the last six games under 16 points. What I do worry about long-term, my like one concern, obviously that Patriots game is the one game out of six where they did not do that. They gave up over 40 points. And that was the game where afterwards, obviously, Myles Garrett makes the comments he did about lack of adjustments, and John Johnson III is saying they seem to do all these things that we had trouble with all year and we just couldn't stop it. So again, I mean, I know we talked about obviously the Lions game. The Lions tried to emulate some of these things that the Patriots did, and just obviously were not good enough to make that happen, I don't think. But I guess I worry long-term when they play some of these other teams who are better down the stretch of the season, if they are kind of able to effectively emulate that Josh McDaniels game plan that the Patriots had, I guess how the conversation would change after that. And if things, maybe players get frustrated and feel like those adjustments still aren't happening, what happens then? That's my still, I guess, one remaining question.
I think that's a good point. I mean, Joe Woods is trending the right way. Right. The defense wasn't very good last year. They brought in all new guys. It took a while for the new guys to gel. People were wondering. I mean, I think it's fair to wonder. It's like when they're getting given up 40 plus to the Chargers and Kyler's being Kyler. I get it. But now they're doing better. So it's like Stefanski, it was like the offense wasn't very good beginning of last year. Then it really trended up. Now here we are in year two and the offense isn't as good. The offense is not just on a trend line upward. I think Joe Woods is trending the right way. But I think that's an important caveat. Right. That I think that was only a couple games ago where the best player on the defense was like, yeah, what's the guy doing? So let's not forget that completely.
Yeah.
But trending the right way. So I agree. Pretty good.
I do think they're trending the right way. I don't think they're the reason that they've lost these games. I think obviously the problems are a lot more centered rooted in the offense. But I don't know, something to keep an eye on, I guess, more than anything.
Yeah, I mean, that was a big, you know, obviously the Browns lost, but that was a big win for Joe Woods on Sunday night. That was the best game Browns have played against Lamar. They're not going to get that in 2 weeks. And so for me, that was just an enormous step forward. I do worry about being so dependent on turnovers. That makes me nervous. If that's now, I think they would have been effective in that game without the turnovers. Honestly, I just thought they played really well in that game, but it worries me if you're so dependent on turnovers, that means your defense is going to be really up and down, because there's a lot of luck involved in turnovers. And obviously you can make some of your own luck in that regard, but man, that's a dangerous way to live. And that's part of why the Browns have had games where they've given up, you know, 40 plus points and where they just haven't been able, you know, they get sliced and diced and they can't force a turnover. And the next thing you know, they're losing 45-10. But I think Joe Woods, that game Sunday night was a really positive step. And I want to see what they do this next Sunday against Baltimore, getting to play them a second time with Baltimore. You know, again, Lamar's probably not going to give you four interceptions in that game. So now how are you going to do against them? Yeah, Joe was an easy one too, which is good, because now we hand the floor over to Doug and we are going to talk about the Haslams.
The Haslams have evolved into good NFL owners.
That's it?
That's it.
But we have to ask you for proof. It's not that I disagree.
The courtroom, Doug. Come on.
The proof is that they're like officials. We haven't heard from them and they're letting their people do their jobs. I wrote a thing like when it was as messy as it was, like, go away for 2 years. We don't want to hear. Let's have 2 years without Jimmy Haslam. And that's what we're in. We don't talk about ownership. We talk about football. We talk about alignment. This is what ownership looks like. I think it's a great credit to them. And it's not like wins and losses are the ultimate goal, of course. But it's hiring the right kind of people and letting them do their jobs. And I think they have, and creating an organization that works together and then allowing some growing pains and having a plan. And even what Mary Kay said about the idea of it was always a plan for like sort of Andrew Berry to leave and come back. And it was a winding road to get here. But I think this is what ownership looks like. I think they're dedicated to the community in a lot of different ways. We know we don't hear about the whatever, what are they doing? They were taking pennies out of the cashier drawer. I don't know what they were doing with the JJ, whatever. You know, that not to be dismissive of that, but like that's in the past. So they just own the team and we never hear about them. And that's how it should be. So I actually think they deserve credit for that, because I think they had a lot of on the job learning to get to this point. And now they kind of can sit back and let people try to make this a winning franchise. So credit to the Haslams.
And their EPA per press conference is off the charts at this point. They really turned it around.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, think about the things they make news for now, right? It's putting turf in high school football fields. It's lakefront development. It's whatever they're going to do with that campus in Berea. None of it is football related. They're making news for stuff owners are supposed to make news for, right? Like what's going to happen with the stadium? How are you going to develop the lake? How big is your campus going to, all that stuff. All the football stuff is being handled by football people.
I'm agreeing with Doug, which is scary. I'm worried for myself, but yeah, I mean, he's right. Doug, when you're right, you're right. Like I was thinking about that like last week or one of the weeks when we saw Jimmy Haslam, like kind of watching practice from afar, you know, and I'm like, you know, there was a time when he was in the headlines constantly for not good reasons. And that's not the case anymore. So I think, yeah, when you talk about ownership, especially NFL ownership, you don't want to be the story. And I think they are only, like Dan said, the story when they should be, and it's for positive things. So, and there's not that like micromanaging going on, which I think was a question earlier, some years ago, but yeah.
I agree with everything that you guys are saying, but for the sake of argument, because this one needs a little bit of fire in it. You know, if they don't make the playoffs this year, you know, I think that you have to look at the whole thing from top to bottom. So if they happen to not make the playoffs, then, you know, I do think that you have to look at the organization as a whole. And then there have been other things like the Odell Beckham Jr. saga. I mean, that was a big thing that rattled the whole organization. And Dan and I have talked about this numerous times. We think that there is residue from that, that there, you know, there that's still reverberating somewhat through the team a little bit. You saw that there were plenty of defensive players that that were rocked by that, not the least of which your superstar defensive end, Myles Garrett, I mean, came out and basically said, we did not handle this the right way from a front office standpoint. Well, that could also trickle all the way up to an ownership standpoint. I mean, Jimmy Haslam, if he wanted to, we see him out there on the field every single day. If he had wanted to intervene in this regard and say, look, let's get some input from our players or something, you know, maybe they could have tried to have a little powwow about that amongst all the parties involved. Maybe, maybe not. You know, you've had other things that other little things that have gone on, but for the most part, I mean, I 100% agree with you that they do have alignment, which they needed. They needed alignment. They finally have it. I mean, my goodness, the things that have gone on in this building since they took over are just mind blowing. And now everybody's pulling in the same direction. For the most part, I'm not saying everybody's pulling in the same direction, because I still think that there is some tension going on in some areas.
So I think there's an important point here too, to remember, and that this is sort of the next test for this front office and this coaching staff. In 2020, like, you got to remember, a football team, we all think about it like a football team, right? Oh, they show up on Sundays, they play. It's a job. It's a workplace. They go to an office. And in 2020, they weren't really in that office very much. You didn't have, you know, there weren't a lot of instances where a guy could walk over to Kevin's office or AB's office and whatever. It took a lot of, guys weren't sitting in the locker room all day and talking with each other and all that stuff. And now you do have some opportunities for that. And it certainly doesn't seem like it's happened, but now, you know, Jimmy's walking through the hallways with Kevin and Andrew, and JW's walking through the hallways, and they have ideas of how things should be done. And maybe they want to dip their toes back in the football side of things. It's a little easier to do that now. So you're kind of back into that office life of an NFL franchise, which I know sounds weird, but it is part of it. You know, you got the guys upstairs, they're all together. They all got offices near each other. Somebody wants to meddle, it's really easy to go meddle if they want to, especially if they're a billionaire who owns the team. But, you know, that's just one of those things that it's sort of a different challenge than what last year presented. Last year was trying to keep everybody healthy and navigate waking up in the morning and not knowing what your schedule is going to be. This year is now trying to navigate going back to normal life and having everybody in the same building and making sure that everybody kind of still gets along and does the right thing.
But Mary Kay, so Odell comes up as maybe Jimmy Haslam or D Haslam could have helped solve Odell, but Kevin handled it great. Kevin, who did not even call Odell while it was going on. Like, how is that more on the ownership than it's on the coach?
As I mentioned before, it became larger than a coaching situation. It became an organizational thing. And the who knows, maybe the Haslams were the ones that were like, get them the heck out of here. We don't know exactly how that went down. We don't know how that went down. But I think that that went over Kevin's head. That's a personnel decision. When you're talking about trying to trade a wide receiver, that's personnel and management and front office. So I don't think that he had, you know, as much say in that situation as he would in, is Odell going to get 40 snaps this week? So I do think it's in part a Haslam thing.
We don't want to do a 5-hour podcast. We don't want to do a 5-hour podcast. Kevin's in the locker room with Odell every day and he didn't call him when this stuff went down. So it's like, whatever. I mean, so we can move on. I understand it's not his decision whether Odell stays or goes.
You are so down on Kevin Stefanski.
No. Kevin should be criticized. I think it's crazy to continue to be talking about Kevin Stefanski like with John Harbaugh and Mike Tomlin, when they had a roster that is built with a lot of good players and they're 6-6. And I know the quarterback is not playing well, but Kevin has not done anything to elevate anybody. So
we should have just called this the Doug bashes Kevin podcast.
I guess we need to do another coach draft. That's what we need to do.
Even Kevin Stefanski is criticizing himself. I mean, I don't know if anybody's saying he shouldn't be criticized. Everybody on this team should be criticized. They're 6-6. But I do agree with Doug on the whole OBJ thing. I mean, yeah, as a personnel decision, but Kevin Stefanski, if he really wanted Odell and thought he was a vital part of the offense, there could have been more noise created to make that. And I'm sure if he wanted to, he could have made something like that public. Is Kevin Stefanski ever going to do that? Probably not. But if you're the head coach and you really want a receiver on your team and you think that that guy is getting open and it's not his fault that he's not getting thrown the ball, I would have to think you're going to have a pretty loud voice in that conversation.
Let's take a break. And then I got some quick questions for you guys that we're going to get to. Back on the Orange and Brown Talk podcast, we're giving you a nice long weekend roundtable. And so I have some quick hit questions. We aren't going to spend 20 minutes on all of these like we did in those first ones, but those are good discussions about a number of key Browns personnel. So here we go. Browns with 5 games left. First question. Besides Christmas in Green Bay, which game are you most concerned about on the remaining schedule?
Well, we've talked about it a lot in past podcasts, but I just think that Pittsburgh game in January, it's Monday Night Football. It's Ben Roethlisberger's probably last regular season game in Pittsburgh. I'm just nervous, especially if they've like won a handful of games up until that point. And, you know, you're talking about the playoff implications potentially. It does make me nervous.
I have those visions of Ben after that Halloween game. Yeah. Walking off the field with his arms raised. I mean, that was a big, big deal to him to win that game at First Energy Stadium.
He's going to dial back the clock for one last grueling regular season win for Cleveland fans is my what my biggest fear is, I think, going into that one.
Yeah, that's a good one. Anybody else on the Pittsburgh corner or what else do you got?
You know, I think I'm going to go with the if there was another game that I think that they might have a little bit of a difficult time with, it might be the Bengals. I think the Bengals played so poorly in that game. And as Doug mentioned right after that game in that podcast, is it a different game if Denzel Ward doesn't get that interception? And I think there's something to be said for that. I think the same thing sort of happened in Pittsburgh in the playoff game. Is it a different game if all of a sudden it just doesn't go really bad?
If the Steelers can snap the football.
If they can snap the football, does that game go differently? If they marched down the field and even got like a field goal on that drive, is that a different football game? So I think there is something to be said for the fact that that just changed that game. I think that changed Jamar. I think that changed the game. And, you know, I think that they're going to have, I think Joe Mixon is going to come in here with his hair on fire. I think they're going to have something to prove. I think that there's going to be so much on the line. I mean, that could be for, you know, that could be for the AFC North crown. I mean, you know, you don't know. So I think that, that's one where the Bengals are going to be really, really mad about the way they lost that game to the Browns. Now, maybe it's just a matchup thing. Maybe some teams just match up better against other teams. And the Browns might just have the Bengals number this year. Baker Mayfield 6-1 against the Bengals. Did you guys realize that? When I was going through like how many winning teams he's beaten in his career. So he's 6-1 against the Bengals. They might just have the Bengals number, but this might be a situation where Joe Burrow just straps the team on his back, gets that connection going with his receivers. Joe Mixon gets rolling, and I don't know. Anything can happen.
All right, so we got the Steelers and the Bengals. What else have we got? Doug, what do you think?
Definitely the Baltimore game. If the offense doesn't come out and look healthier and fixed, the season's over.
Right.
And they just picked off Lamar 4 times and lost. So, and the Ravens are a good franchise. And I know the Ravens have their issues, but like if they don't beat Baltimore, the Pittsburgh and Cincinnati games aren't going to matter. Who thinks if they go out and lose to Baltimore 20-7, be like, okay, well, now they just, it's like, no, they had the bye week to get it together and they did not get it together. And now they're 6-7. You think they're going to go 4-0 to end the season? They have to look fixed in Cleveland at 1 o'clock next Sunday, or that's it.
Yeah, that's the obvious answer. I mean, that's the biggest game. And if you don't win that, if you don't look better, if you don't look like things have been fixed, and yeah, what's the point of the rest of this season? Because if you're at 6-7 and now you've lost twice to the Ravens, you've already lost to the Chargers and the Broncos, who are both ahead of you in the playoff standings, then what are we doing? It's time to pack it in and have some, have even more conversations about the future of people on this team.
So have you guys seen this thing on Reddit, this coin flip guy, this Raiders fan? At the beginning of the season, he flipped a coin for every Raiders game. And the coin has gotten every single game right.
Oh my God.
So they play Washington, I think, next. And then they play the Browns. And this coin predicted that they would beat the Browns. So it's basically written in stone. Like, even if they beat the Ravens, whatever happens on December 12th, doesn't matter. They're going to turn around on Saturday and lose to the Las Vegas Raiders. I almost said Oakland Raiders. Lose to the Las Vegas Raiders. That game, I think the right answer is probably Baltimore. But that Raiders game has me a little nervous. Just a little bit. Because, like, if you beat Baltimore, everybody's feeling good, and then you turn around 6 days later and lose to Las Vegas. Just everything's deflated again. And I think Derek Carr is a good enough quarterback to come in and be able to produce against this defense. So that game's got me nervous, but also the coin flip too.
Really? I mean, I think it's, you've talked about every remaining game besides the Green Bay game, obviously, because that's the question was, besides the Green Bay game, what are you nervous about? I mean, I think all of us gave good reasons though, for why you could be nervous about every single one of these games remaining on the schedule.
Yeah, but the Browns are proving anything that you should be nervous about every game.
Yep. You never know what you're going to get. That's the one constant this year.
All right. So on that note, the biggest positive this season has been blank. Don't all jump
in. JOK and Greg Newsome's early contributions. And we talked about that a little bit, that drafting those two guys by Andrew Berry, great move. And JOK, I think, has been a pleasant surprise despite being, you know, a little bit stop and start with some of these injuries. So I think those are two solid positives.
I'm going to go with Myles Garrett. I mean, Myles Garrett has consistently gotten through the season healthy and has produced sacks all along the way. He's tied the record. He will break the record. He will challenge for the Michael Strahan's record of 22.5. So the fact that he has been able to remain consistent throughout the season and play at a very high level throughout the year, I think is, in my mind, the biggest positive.
I do think I'll slightly expand on Ashley. I think I was going to say Miles, but I think Ashley's point that when you take JOK, but I'm going to go more to the secondary. When you think about the way Greg Newsome has played, coupled with the leap that Denzel made as no doubt about it, number one corner. And then you think about Grant Delpit and JJ3 in the back end. Ronnie Harrison's been a little inconsistent. I don't know that he's here long-term, but those four guys, when you think about where their secondary was and where their secondary is now, I think those are four guys who are here for the next several years. And you have to be able to rely on your secondary in the NFL. To have a young, talented secondary is a must, and I think they should have a belief that they have that.
Man, there's a lot of ways I could go. I agree with Miles. The fact that he's played every game is big. Joel Bitonio playing every game is big. But I think the biggest positive of this season is that all the wild card teams in the AFC right now are 7-4, 7-4, and 6-5. If you want a silver lining to where the Browns are right now, that's probably it. That there is still plenty of opportunity for them to not just sneak in as a wild card, but even catch the Ravens with the fact that they have so many division games left and they play the Ravens again. That's probably the biggest positive for this team right now.
Yeah. I was thinking Greg Newsome, just him being like a legit dude I think matters a lot. And I actually wanted to say this when we were having the Joe Woods discussion, and I forgot, but I do think one of the positives for Joe Woods is, like, when we talk about offensive coaches, right, their specialty is like the quarterback or something. So they come in and they develop a quarterback. Joe Woods' specialty is the secondary. And he's done a pretty good job developing this secondary so far. I'm a little shakier on the safeties than maybe you are, though. I think John Johnson will be fine. I'm worried about Grant Delpit. I don't know. And maybe it's just the injury and just coming back from the injury. Ronnie Harrison's been a mess. But Andrew Berry will fix it.
I think Grant played pretty well last week.
I do. Yeah. I think that was probably his best.
That's like a good sign. Yeah.
Look at that. All kinds of good signs from that Baltimore game.
And I do think, along with what Scott said, the idea that the Chiefs look human and they may be getting it together, but that if you thought there's like, well, there's this giant roadblock in the AFC, and no matter how good the Browns are, how are they ever going to get past that? It's like, oh, the Chiefs are human. That's not in a weird season for the Browns. The idea that it's been weird elsewhere does matter a little bit.
All right. We've probably covered these next few a little bit, so we don't have to spend a ton of time on them. But the biggest disappointment this season has been blank.
Injuries.
The offense.
Scott says injuries. Doug says Baker. Ashley says the offense.
I'm going to go Baker.
Yeah.
I say injuries because it makes it so hard to evaluate Baker. It makes it hard to evaluate this offense. I mean, next man up inspires players and fine, whatever. Blake Hance is still Blake Hance. And, you know, Darnus Johnson is not Kareem Hunt. Rashard Higgins is not Jarvis Landry in the slot. It matters.
Yeah, I think I'm just going to go with the fact that Baker hasn't made that leap for whatever reason. And maybe it's the injuries, whatever it is, that we just haven't seen that jump that we thought we were maybe going to see this year. Most surprising, it can be good or bad, most surprising thing this season has been, is it just going to be Baker for all of these?
I was going to say the offense, to some extent, again, we've talked about it before, this kind of inability to surprise us in a lot of ways or adapt on the fly. And yeah, so same answer for me.
I'm going to go with the crash and burn of the receiving core. Just, you know, where are they? Where have they gone? Rashard Higgins is inactive. Odell's gone. Jarvis hasn't been himself, although he's getting better now. You know, just the whole receiving core, that's been really surprising to me. I mean, in the interest of saying something other than Baker Mayfield, that would probably be the next thing for me, is just the what happened to the whole receiving core.
But I would say that, I mean, nobody thought Baker was 100% sure thing coming into this year. And I don't know that we thought the receivers were 100% sure thing. I thought the way the tackles played last year, they were like 100% sure thing. And the Conklin injury is devastating, but also that Jed Wills has been dealing with his injury all year, that he's been playing but hasn't been himself. That when you think about what really fixed the offense last year, great tackle play really mattered compared to 2019. And Scott, you were doing this, I got to watch the tape, right? I mean, like, the tackle play hasn't been great. And we know why. But man, that was something that you would have thought coming into this year you weren't going to have to worry about at all. And you even liked the third tackle. You thought Chris Hubbard's a pretty good swing tackle as a veteran guy, and then he got hurt. So that Blake Hance has as much of an impact on this offense as he does, and that there's no sure thing on the edge that Baker can feel 100% about is not what I expected.
You guys are all wrong. The most surprising thing this season is Chase McLaughlin making his first 26 kicks. 26
field
goals and extra points, and that he had one blocked against the Broncos, which wasn't his fault. So really, he didn't miss a kick until week 9 against the Bengals. I'm just saying, if that didn't surprise you, then I don't know. We're talking about Browns kickers.
That was surprising.
They don't do that.
I'm going to say Jadeveon Clowney. I was a little skeptical. I wasn't sure how he was going to look after playing 8 games in Tennessee and not getting a sack. And he's been really good this year. He's provided a ton of pressure opposite Miles. He's only missed one game. I think he's got 3.5 sacks, which, you know, it's not amazing, but again, it's all about the pressures. And he's been right there creating pressures, hurries, all sorts of things. So I'm going to say Jadeveon Clowney, because I'm positive, Dan, today now. No more. I'm all sunshine and rainbows and Super Bowls, Doug.
Got all your pessimism out on Sunday.
Sunshine, rainbows, and Super Bowls. I would buy that t-shirt.
All right. Again, here we go. The biggest offseason need is blank.
Well, let Doug have the floor so he can talk about Garrett Wilson and wide receivers.
Oh, I thought you were going to say let Doug have the floor so he can say a new head coach. I'm just kidding. I don't really think that. No, receiver. I think they have to. I think they have to target a number one receiver. And I think it is important for this franchise to bring in a number one receiver on the ground floor who has no preconceptions, no previous ideas of what his usage should be, that he learns in the Brown system, and that, you know, Jarvis and Odell all had both had football lives somewhere else that I think were good, right? That Jarvis brought an attitude to this team that was needed as a veteran, and Odell was a superstar and kind of juiced everybody up. But it's time for the Browns to develop a number one receiver that they didn't take in the third round or the sixth round. And I think it's vital to the progress of this offense, and it should be what they do with their first draft pick.
I agree with Doug. But for the sake of conversation, I'm now going to talk about another need they could address, knowing that Jadeveon Clowney and Tack McKinley are on these one-year deals. They could go after an edge rusher, I think, and I'm going to talk about two guys that the Buckeye Talk listeners are very familiar with after last weekend. I think Aiden Hutchinson from Michigan probably has made himself a top five pick, so he's probably not coming here, but you could go after David Ojabo, who I think has a huge upside, which everyone kind of saw, I think, in the Ohio State game, especially knowing he just started playing football like 5 or 6 years ago. The way he's performed this year, really a testament to him to be able to step up and fill those shoes that Quiddy Pay left at Michigan. So I think, yeah, they could go after another high-level edge rusher if Tack and Jadeveon are not here after this season.
That's who Dane Brugler gave the Browns in his latest mock, I think, that came out yesterday or the day before.
You know, since Doug didn't go with this one, maybe I'll take it. How about the possible replacement for Baker Mayfield if it becomes apparent that that it's not going to work out long-term for him here? So in free agency, through a trade, or through the draft, somebody that you think can start and win games for you in the event that you feel it's time to move forward.
Mary Kay, coming in hot.
I don't know if I have anything to add. I mean, you guys kind of listed the needs that I had in mind, so I don't know if I have a guy specifically to add to that. Wide receiver, or if you need a new quarterback, or if I'm all about a young edge rusher too. I think all of those would. I think those would be great.
From mine, just like in a perfect world, Aiden Hutchinson and Myles Garrett would be insane.
Stop. It's not Aiden Hutchinson.
I know it's not going to happen, Doug, but I'm just, let me imagine it.
He might go number one.
We might as well talk about what if the Browns get Aaron Donald? Like, he's not, he's not going to be a Brown.
Come on.
You can't live it. This is real life, Ashley. They're 6-6. It's time to get real.
Thanks for bringing me back down to earth, Doug. But I'm just saying, in a perfect world, I'm done.
Okay. Scott, did you have anything to add to that?
No, I mean, I agree with wide receiver. They need consistency. They need a big play person there who, I mean, that's his biggest impact on wins outside of quarterback. So, but I will say defensive tackle, which is, I'm sure the Browns probably view that as kind of a throwaway position and they'll keep rotating people in. But Malik McDowell and Malik Jackson have not been good. And you're probably going to see two different people there next season.
I'll just say this last thing about receiver. Just imagine if they would get the equivalent at receiver of a Greg Newsome or a Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoah that they got late in the first round and then the second round last year, right? And that's just a talent level step up from DPJ and Anthony Schwartz. Just imagine, we've seen the immediate impact of those guys. Just envision that, what it would do. That's what they need to do.
All right, last one here. And you can choose. So this is a multiple choice and a fill in the blank. And you don't have to like whether you believe the Browns will make the playoffs or won't make the playoffs. You can kind of just make the case you want to make here. The Browns will or won't make the playoffs because blank. So you can choose whichever route you want to go. You can make the case for them making the playoffs, even if you believe they won't.
They won't make the playoffs because they'll lose the tiebreaker in the big mishmash of the AFC. In a world where I was said, you know, like, yeses are easy and noes are easy and maybes are hard. I think that I'm envisioning the end of the season being a maybe, that I don't know they're going to come out and go 4-1 and storm to the playoffs. I don't know they're going to come out and go 1-4 and fall off a cliff and be like, well, that's it. Baker's never playing another snap here. I think they'll probably look good 1 week. They'll look bad 1 week. They'll win a close game. They'll lose a close game. they'll be right there. And then there's just enough things against them in the tiebreakers, right? That their record against the AFC isn't very good. They've lost to the Chargers, that whatever, that they'll be close and no cigar and not quite make it.
I'm changing the wording of this. I'm going to say if the Browns make the playoffs, it will be because they had some sort of magical ride over the last 5 weeks that no sane person thought was likely. And the AFC remained a quagmire of mediocrity. That's how they make the playoffs.
That was a negative idea expressed in the most positive way possible.
Love it. Quagmire of mediocrity. That should actually be the new name of our podcast.
Mm-hmm. I'll go. If the Browns make the playoffs, it is because the offense snaps into focus with Kareem Hunt and Nick Chubb, and all of a sudden Baker starts playing really well. He gets the ball to his receivers. They win 3 or 4 games. Might take 4 games. Does anybody think that they can get into the playoffs if they only win 3 more games? Does anybody think that? That's
no.
That's a no, right? Everybody thinks it's got to be 4, right?
I think it's because of the tiebreakers. Like Scott has been saying, the AFC is really tight and mediocre. And so 9 and 8 might get somebody in, but I don't know if it'll be the Browns.
Probably not them. So they've got to win. They've got to go 4-1. If they are going 4-1, it's because I think the defense has woken up. It's because all of the sudden they come back from the bye and the Cinderella slipper goes back on and voila, they can score 40 points again.
And the Packers game would probably be the one game you lose because you can't afford to lose a game in the AFC.
Right.
Yeah, that's got to be the one.
So they blow through the division. They beat up on everybody in the division. They beat the Raiders, and they lose to the Packers because their offense somehow finds itself over the bye.
I was going to say what Doug said about the tiebreakers. If they don't make it, it's going to be because of that. But now I'm going to say, go off of Mary Kay's, if they don't make it, it's going to be because this offense does not take another step forward. And it's more of the same. And it's more of the only certain thing we have with them is uncertainty. And we don't know what we're going to get week to week. And as a result, they go 3-2 or 2-3 or something crazy down the stretch here.
Yeah, I'm going to do the Scott method here. If the Browns make the playoffs, because if I were answering this honestly, I would pick the won't option, but I've been over that. If they make the playoffs, it'll be because this bye week just cleansed everything. And like I said, maybe everybody just needs to get on a plane and get away from each other. You know, John Johnson is in LA and all these guys probably went back to Florida, whatever. They got away from each other. They come back. They're ready to go. It was sort of like a little spring break. Now they're just ready to go for 5 weeks. So if they make the playoffs, it'll be because this bye week was just a cleansing week off. And they're ready to go. And they're kind of like what Mary Kay said too. Maybe they fix the offense and they're just ready to roll. Don't know if I'm convinced that's going to happen though. I think that's everything. Scott is wearing his Kent State hat. So the Flashes are going to be in Detroit this weekend. So everybody watch Kent State go win the MAC. And that'll be it for the Orange and Brown Talk podcast this week. We are going to take one day off, believe it or not. We will not have a podcast on Monday since it's the bye week, so there'll be no post-game pod. Your next podcast that you'll get on your feed will be Tuesday when Mary Kay and I bring you the Hey MK podcast, and then back to a normal week after that as the Browns get ready to face the Ravens. So make sure you're subscribed wherever you listen to your podcast. Leave us 5-star reviews, all that good stuff, and make sure you're a Football Insider subscriber, cleveland.com/Browns, the blue banner at the top of the page. So for Doug, Ashley, Mary Kay, and Scott, I'm Dan. Thanks for listening.
Sunshine, rainbows, and Super Bowls. I would buy that t-shirt.